Slowly, patiently, with contemptuous politeness, the conductor gave him an exact account of the situation. But years ago in grammar school, in high school, in college, Kip Chalmers had been taught that man does not and need not live by reason. "Damn your tunnel," he screamed. "Do you think I'm going to let you hold me up because of some miserable tunnel? Do you want to wreck vital national plans on account of a tunnel? Tell your engineer that I must be in San Francisco by evening and that he's got to get me there." "How?" "That's your job, not mine." "There is no way to do it." "Then find a way, goddamn you." The conductor did not answer. "Do you think I'll let your miserable technological problems interfere with crucial social issues? Do you know who I am? Tell that engineer to start moving if he values his job." "The engineer has his orders." "Orders be damned. I give the orders these days. Tell him to start at once." "Perhaps you'd better speak to the station agent, Mr. Chalmers. I have no authority to answer you as I'd like to," said the conductor, and walked out. Chalmers leaped to his feet. "Say, Kip," said Lester Tuck uneasily, "maybe it's true. Maybe they can't do it." "They can if they have to," snapped Chalmers, marching resolutely to the door. Years ago in college, he had been taught that the only effective means to impel men to action was fear. In the dilapidated office of Winston Station, he confronted a sleepy man with slack, worn features and a frightened young boy who sat at the operator's desk. They listened in silent stupor to a stream of profanity such as they had never heard from any section gang. "And it's not my problem how you get the train through the tunnel. That's for you to figure out," Chalmers concluded. "But if you don't get me an engine and don't start that train, you can kiss goodbye to your jobs, your work permits, and this whole goddamn railroad." The station agent had never heard of Kip Chalmers and did not know the nature of his position. But he knew that this was the day when unknown men in undefined positions held unlimited power, the power of life or death. "It's not up to us, Mr. Chalmers," he said pleadingly. "We don't issue the orders out here. The order came from Silver Springs. Suppose you telephone Mr. Mitchum and..."
"Who's Mr. Mitchum?"
"He's the division superintendent at Silver Springs. Suppose you send him a message to..."
"I should bother with a division superintendent. I'll send a message to Jim Taggart. That's what I'm going to do."
Before the station agent had time to recover, Chalmers whirled to the boy, ordering, "You, take this down and send it at once." It was a message which, a month ago, the station agent would not have accepted from any passenger. The rules forbade it. But he was not certain about any rules any longer. "Mr. James Taggart, New York City. Am held up on the Comet at Winston, Colorado, by the incompetence of your men, who refuse to give me an engine. Have meeting in San Francisco in the evening of top-level national importance. If you don't move my train at once, I'll let you guess the consequences. Kip Chalmers." After the boy had transmitted the words onto the wires that stretched from pole to pole across a continent as guardians of the Taggart track, after Kip Chalmers had returned to his car to wait for an answer, the station agent telephoned Dave Mitchum, who was his friend, and read to him the text of the message. He heard Mitchum groan in answer.
"I thought I'd tell you, Dave. I never heard of the guy before, but maybe he's somebody important."
"I don't know," moaned Mitchum.
"Kip Chalmers? You see his name in the newspapers all the time, right in with all the top-level boys. I don't know what he is, but if he's from Washington, we can't take any chances. Oh, Christ, what are we going to do?" "We can't take any chances," thought the Taggart operator in New York, and transmitted the message by telephone to James Taggart's home. It was close to 6 a.m. in New York, and James Taggart was awakened out of the fitful sleep of a restless night. He listened to the telephone, his face sagging. He felt the same fear as the station agent of Winston, and for the same reason. He called the home of Clifton Losey. All the rage which he could not pour upon Kip Chalmers was poured over the telephone wire upon Clifton Losey.
"Do something," screamed Taggart. "I don't care what you do. It's your job, not mine, but see to it that that train gets through. What in hell is going on? I never heard of the Comet being held up. Is that how you run your department? It's a fine thing when important passengers have to start sending messages to me. At least when my sister ran the place, I wasn't awakened in the middle of the night over every spike that broke in Iowa. Colorado, I mean.
"I'm so sorry, Jim," said Clifton Losey smoothly, in a tone that balanced apology, reassurance, and the right degree of patronizing confidence. "It's just a misunderstanding. It's somebody's stupid mistake. Don't worry, I'll take care of it. I was, as a matter of fact, in bed, but I'll attend to it at once." Clifton Losey was not in bed. He had just returned from a round of nightclubs in the company of a young lady. He asked her to wait and hurried to the offices of Taggart Transcontinental. None of the night staff who saw him there could say why he chose to appear in person, but neither could they say that it had been unnecessary. He rushed in and out of several offices, was seen by many people, and gave an impression of great activity. The only physical result of it was an order that went over the wires to Dave Mitchum, superintendent of the Colorado Division. "Give an engine to Mr. Chalmers at once. Send the Comet through safely and without unnecessary delay. If you are unable to perform your duties, I shall hold you responsible before the Unification Board. Clifton Losey." Then, calling his girlfriend to join him, Clifton Losey drove to a country roadhouse to make certain that no one would be able to find him in the next few hours. The dispatcher at Silver Springs was baffled by the order that he handed to Dave Mitchum. But Dave Mitchum understood. He knew that no railroad order would ever speak in such terms as giving an engine to a passenger. He knew that the thing was a showpiece. He guessed what sort of show was being staged, and he felt a cold sweat at the realization of who was being framed as the goat of the show. "What's the matter, Dave?" asked the trainmaster. Mitchum did not answer. He seized the telephone, his hand shaking as he begged for a connection to the Taggart operator in New York. He looked like an animal in a trap. He begged the New York operator to get him Mr. Clifton Losey's home. The operator tried. There was no answer. He begged the operator to keep on trying and to try every number he could think of where Mr. Losey might be found. The operator promised, and Mitchum hung up, but knew that it was useless to wait or to speak to anyone in Mr. Losey's department. "What's the matter, Dave?" Mitchum handed him the order, and saw by the look on the trainmaster's face that the trap was as bad as he had suspected. He called the region headquarters of Taggart Transcontinental at Omaha, Nebraska, and begged to speak to the general manager of the region. There was a brief silence on the wire. Then the voice of the Omaha operator told him that the general manager had resigned and vanished 3 days ago. "Over a little trouble with Mr. Losey," the voice added. He asked to speak to the assistant general manager in charge of his particular district, but the assistant was out of town for the weekend and could not be reached. "Get me somebody else," Mitchum screamed. "Anybody of any district. For Christ's sake, get me somebody who'll tell me what to do." The man who came on the wire was the assistant general manager of the Iowa-Minnesota district. "What?" he interrupted at Mitchum's first words. "At Winston, Colorado? Why in hell are you calling me?" "No, don't tell me what happened. I don't want to know it." "No," I said, "no, you're not going to frame me into having to explain afterwards why I did or didn't do anything about whatever it is. It's not my problem. Speak to some region executive. Don't pick on me. What do I have to do with Colorado?" "Oh, hell, I don't know. Get the chief engineer. Speak to him." The chief engineer of the central region answered impatiently, "Yes, what? What is it?" And Mitchum rushed desperately to explain. When the chief engineer heard that there was no diesel, he snapped, "Then hold the train, of course." When he heard about Mr. Chalmers, he said, his voice suddenly subdued, "Kip Chalmers, of Washington? Well, I don't know. That would be a matter for Mr. Losey to decide." When Mitchum said, "Mr. Losey ordered me to arrange it, but," the chief engineer snapped in great relief, "Then do exactly as Mr. Losey says," and hung up. Dave Mitchum replaced the telephone receiver cautiously. He did not scream any longer. Instead, he tiptoed to a chair, almost as if he were sneaking. He sat looking at Mr. Losey's order for a long time. Then he snatched a glance about the room. The dispatcher was busy at his telephone. The trainmaster and the road foreman were there, but they pretended that they were not waiting. He wished Bill Brent, the chief dispatcher, would go home. Bill Brent stood in a corner watching him. Brent was a short, thin man with broad shoulders. He was 40, but looked younger. He had the pale face of an office worker, and the hard, lean features of a cowboy. He was the best dispatcher on the system.